Welcome to the King's Road Podcast. I am your host, the Aries, Justin Yontz, and I'm here with
City Saint.
And we're also here with another guest, RJ Adams.
RJ Adams of Virtues Media.
That is correct. And we are here to change your view on professional wrestling. And we're talking March 17th, 1997. Probably the best Raw up to that date. What do you think?
I think it's the best Raw in 97. Yeah. And I think it represents the era of that year.
It really
year.
Does.
I would say so far, it definitely represents that year, the show that we're talking about. But Raw had some pretty significant episodes even before that point. But this is definitely pretty big for its era.
Really? What's another Raw that like you thought was more? I'm curious.
I don't necessarily think there was like a bigger Raw in terms of the time period.
Okay.
But in terms of the talent of the time, I mean, like, I believe that you had better talent in 93, 94 than in 95, 96 on Raw.
Yeah, matches-wise. Yeah, I would agree with that. But I'm saying, like, overall, the whole show, like, this whole show really flows, and this show really gets you excited to watch WrestleMania 13.
I definitely do agree with you. This is a completely different era from even like WrestleManias from the past and WrestleManias even from the future. You pretty much had like all the heat going for the individual talents at the time. I was like, of course, this was like the era of Stone Cold and Bret Hart. Of course, you have Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels returns here, and he does not look like he's hurt.
Like, yeah, and the champion of the time is Sid Vicious.
Yeah, which is kind of scary. I'm going to be honest with you. I think it should have been Bret and Austin with the title. I feel like when Taker gets the title, it's a lame duck period. He doesn't feel like the top guy in the company when he's got it. And I think it would have been, Austin loses anyways at WrestleMania 13. So just have Bret hold the title all the way to Survivor Series.
Exactly. And then you have to remember The Undertaker was essentially the boogeyman for an entire generation of wrestling fans. It's not until we get to 98, 99 where we decide that, you know, Undertaker decides that he, for himself, you know what, maybe I might want to do something different. Yeah. And that's when he becomes a biker taker. I mean, to me, that's, I never really liked that era, but
no, I don't like
it. It did provide like a lot of interesting scenarios for the time period. And it was very different from what The Undertaker was doing for the previous 10 years.
You know what the problem is? I agree. Even though I did love Big Evil Undertaker.
Yeah, I liked it when he turned heel. That's the only time I liked it.
The Undertaker character just did not fit in 2000. Just didn't. I could see it. I could see the crowd. They would laugh. They would have laughed.
We'd be like, I'll make you. Remember he tried like 15 different catchphrases. I'll make you famous. And I'll, you know, do this. And it's like, what the hell?
Not personal.
That one actually got over.
It's not personal. It's just business. The Undertaker. It's not personal.
Was that? I didn't even know that was one of
and
them.
In ministry, when he was in the corporate ministry.
When Undertaker was like super big in the
corporate ministry.
I was like, we had like, you know, like the corporate ministry for like Midian, like all those other people, like 98, 99.
I liked the ministry. I did not like the corporate ministry. I thought that was too hokey and stupid.
It kind of was. I'll definitely give you that. But
the hell is a corporate ministry.
But in terms of like The Undertaker, you did need to do something with him that was a little different because he's been the exact same way since 1990. And although like he might have been over, like you kind of do have to do something different with that character.
Also, I think him switching to the American Badass was necessary because in my opinion, that's when he started getting comfortable with having actual matches. And in my opinion, and I think a lot of people agree, you might agree as well, to be honest, his prime wasn't in his 20s or 30s. I think his prime was like in the early 2000s, like in 2004 and 5 and 6, honestly. And he was like mid 40s. I think he had by 2000 far his best matches.
2007. Consistent. You know,
yeah, I was like, yeah, that's, I wouldn't agree with you on that. Like, that's actually been proven. Like, there was something about that whole biker taker that he felt way more comfortable than he did with just the tombstone. I mean, but for me personally speaking, like, I felt like his run in 98-99 was possibly like the most intense run he's actually ever had as the Undertaker.
Well, he felt like he felt like a top guy at that point.
Yeah, like he was.
He started was definitely, to feel like a top.
It was
guy.
Brett, it was Shawn, and it was Taker. Anyone that lived through that era will tell you it was the exact same three people, and that's all the merch that they made at the time.
Yeah,
and that merch sucked.
Nash. It's like, believe you and me though, if I could get my parents to pay for some of that, I would still have it.
Really? Which yeah, what did you what give me a shirt that you wish you could still have?
I mean, like, I remember back in the day when they were selling Shawn Michaels denim jackets and also Bret Hart denim jackets. I think the Bret Hart one actually got re-released by
really? By yeah, that's kind company. Of a cool idea. I never liked their shirts though. Their shirts always look like it was like their face on it and it looks stupid.
It was like, yeah, I mean, definitely at that time, like, merch was just super simple.
Like, Brett's best shirt was that skull thing with the wings on it. There's your shirt. That's all he needs.
Strongly disagree. My favorite Bret Hart shirt. It was the Bret Hart all over print.
Yeah, full print.
So like, I've been trying to find a
$400.
Decent copy. Like, I can't. Yeah, like he said, I can't find a decent shirt within eBay. A large or medium with
$400.
It's like, it's expensive. I want that shirt, and I will have it.
I love those new generation full prints. I don't like faces and shirts except for the full prints. It just, it looked cool and it was different. And it's still different. You don't see full print shirts now.
I was like, yeah, those are still pretty expensive shirts to make. Like,
quality is like really good. Like, I knew a friend that had that Bret Hart shirt and I tried to get it from him and he would never sell it. I offered him $400. He still wouldn't sell it. Man, that guy. You would have liked.
What is that, what is it? Like
Brett, Brett everything at his house.
I mean, I got the.
You have a shrine his house.
Oh, the one with he's got the belt on there. Does he have the belt?
Repeat that.
It's like orange.
I was like, I mean, no, but
no. I remember like lime green and gray and pink and black.
I was like, I mean, I know for myself, I mean, Bret Hart, like, he definitely had, like, different gear for different sort of situations. Like, I mean, Survivor, it was a Royal Rumble 93. It was like he had the paint splattered gear.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And there's a guy that's, like, making pajamas and sweatpants with that, with the different tights. Gear.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you didn't know that? Here, I'll send you a thing.
Send me the goddamn link for that shit.
Yeah. What
the hell is that?
Shut the fuck up.
They've got like Sean's, like, you know, they've got 97, you know, Bad Blood. They've got Sean,
the chalk shit?
Like,
the chalk line stuff? Is that the chalk line shit?
I don't know if it's
It could be chalk line. Those are the only like people I know is like doing like past shit from like that era.
I'm gonna have to look for it, but yeah, I saw it the other day and I thought it looked, you know, and they like, did have Bret Hart stuff, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have like two Bret Hart jackets at this point, and I've met him twice in person. One time I actually had him sign a hard book copy of his autobiography.
What did you ask him? I'm curious. What would you ask
him? To me, I mean, if I can remember, I asked him something about like the screw job, and like he seemed like he was real fucking over discussing that shit. And I've heard that from other people that they've brought the book to him, and then like they'll specifically request the screw job portion of the book be signed, and he'll always go to the front and sign.
I think he's sick of the screw job.
I mean, that was a pretty painful time for him. I mean, yeah. we just think of ourselves as like basic marks. It's like how could you go to WCW, Brett? And
no, I side with Brett because Brett, he had already fulfilled all his contracts, all his contracted matches. So he could have gone and dropped the fucking belt that day. If he wanted
like,
to,
like, yeah, like, if you want me to drop the belt on the preview show,
I mean,
show,
the big fear, though, the fear was that Bischoff the next night might go on there and say that they're that the WWF champion is coming to our.
I
show.
Mean, well, I never bought that.
I was
excuse.
Like, that is,
but
that
that's
is
what
actually
they're trying to use.
That's actually inaccurate because at the, right. previously. When Eric Bischoff had convinced Medusa to drop the belt in the trash,
they got sued.
They got fucking sued. And
exactly.
I'm pretty sure.
So I don't think, yeah. It's more revisionist history and it pisses
it's
me off whenever I hear it.
More revisionist history.
It's the WWE way.
I mean, the funny thing is that Austin is the one that told him not to go to WCW. He said,
I was like, because, yeah, that motherfucker had experience.
I don't know
where
you're going,
man. I was like, I mean, I'll tell anybody to this day, Stone Cold Steve Austin needed to be fired from WCW to get to the Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, 1,000%.
I just love the fact that when after he got screwed, after he punched out Vince, he went back into the locker room and he told the guys, he said, don't let this happen to you. And I got to believe like Rock and probably, you know, and Austin probably were like, yeah. Keep
I was like rocking, like I mean, I, you better believe Rock and Austin are fucking
listening
Brent.
To that. Because I just wish we got on camera the punch. That would have been so great.
That would have been cool. But I mean, you see like the aftermath in the documentary. And,
I mean, I know the documentary has Taker. They took it out, but they do have footage of Taker, you know, banging on Vince's door to go and talk to Brett. And I would have loved to have seen that, but he took it out because he respected Taker's character.
I was like, yeah, like a man like Undertaker, like you have to understand he's old school as fuck. So it was like, he's probably going to go up to Vince like, what the fuck are you doing? And then like Vince probably broke it down and was like, look, Brett was going up against business. We tried all the different ways to fucking accommodate him. He couldn't be accommodated. So I had to do what I had to do. And I mean, do you feel that I was wrong?
Here's another thing that pisses me off.
You were defending your company.
Here's a problem.
I know we've
naive.
Gotten into the screw job now. And
Brett was naive.
I was like, you know what? On some real shit, I would have fought you over that opinion for a long time. But here's the thing.
He's
an old school vet in a family of wrestling. It's impossible.
I mean,
like
Earl swore on his kids.
The British Bulldog told you, watch out.
I mean, Earl Hebner swore on his kids to Brett while he was on the plane.
That don't mean shit.
No, I know it doesn't mean shit. But and remember, Vader also told Brett. He said, "Don't get in any positions where they could screw you because he came from Japan."
Don't ever forget though that he had that match with Shawn Michaels, and that's pretty much what the fuck happened to him.
I know he didn't.
Put the sharpshooter on.
But
you
remember,
like Bret Hart is just trying to be a good ass citizen, a good ass wrestler.
If
that's what we got to do, I'll help you put it on.
I mean, the great thing about Bret was he did that. You know, he went into that meeting with Vince and he wore the wire, and you've got Vince saying, "Yeah, whatever you want." whatever you want, and you could tell the tone in his voice changes as soon as he says it. Shows what a lie. The Wrestling with Shadows that he says the piece of shit locked himself in his office.
I was like, you know what's actually pretty amazing about that footage? You see Vince McMahon, he
coming
made
out.
His decision. It's like, if you're gonna punch me in the face, do it.
Yeah. He knew there was a camera on him. That's why he said it. It was not tough.
In either case, if it's
just the thing though, we were robbed of a really good.
There's
match.
One thing we know about Vince is he does not care about putting his body on the line. That is one thing we emphatically know, but we didn't know at the time.
I saw this motherfucker last year do a jump in the fucking PC.
The dude
tore both his quads getting in the ring. And he didn't even shed a fucking tear. He ain't even said a word.
He no-sold it.
How you no-sold? Although
when, when
he got backstage, his he did break.
Oh
down.
Yeah, because he's backstage where there's no fucking cameras.
Exactly.
If I'm gonna if I'm gonna break my shit in front of my homie here, like I'm gonna no sell that shit until I don't have to.
You know how many fights I've been where like I'm aching like a motherfucker. I ain't selling that shit till I get home. Fuck out of here.
So well, the adrenaline you can't have will the next help. Motherfucker jump you?
Adrenaline will help.
I mean, that's
adrenaline is a motherfucker. Too.
This is all Brooklyn shit. This is all Brooklyn shit. Like, so, all right,
but,
I mean,
but anyways, gotta, getting back to where we are with the screw job, you know, I don't know. I side with Brett 100%. All right, so let's get into this Raw because we've completely gone off the rails. Brett comes out. He does that promo in this show. It's you know a decent promo. Not much to it, just kind of selling the screw job, you know, that, you know, not the screw job, selling that, you know, he's going to beat Austin. Then we go back a little bit later and Austin has his promo where he basically, you know, it's basically just saying, you know, I'm going to make sure that Brett, you know, gets the title because I want it to be for the WWF title. And then we get to the, cage match. And it's,
you know,
Brett
on that Steve. Note on this note, this is a foundational problem with WWE now as compared to them. If there's one thing that wrestling is supposed to revolve around, at least that's how I grew up, is the world title.
Yeah.
And the importance of the world title and what a person is willing to do to get the world title. And you've seen this feud, a blood feud between Austin and Brett. And despite the hate Austin has for Brett, he is willing to help him in the match because the only thing he cares about more than the hate he has for Brett is becoming WWF champion, like he said, and the King of the Ring half a year before that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. like, this motherfucker had that whole speech. Like, Austin 316 said, I'll just whip anybody's ass.
You're on the list.
Stone Cold's list.
On the list. And that's Stone Cold's list. And I'm fixing to run through every one of them.
I was like, and Justin, I'll be real as fuck with you. Like, I was, to this day, a big Bret Hart mark. But, like, I didn't really appreciate Austin and what he did more until I really started talking to him. Really? Because, like.
The Hood love Austin, though.
The Hood does love Austin.
The Hood, to this day.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, I remember Austin was doing like the podcast, and
I've
like
lived in the Hood. Remember?
Yeah, like he phones in, and somebody phones in from like I think from the Bronx or something.
Yeah,
and he was like, "Yo, the Hood loves you, bro." Like he said a bunch of shit, and Austin's like, he couldn't repeat what the guy was saying. And he's like, "Yeah, man."
I don't understand a damn word you just said.
Yeah, he understood.
Yeah, he understood. He just can't repeat the N word. You know, talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, Austin, you man. Mm.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what it was in the Hood.
So, all right. So now we're at this cage match. What do you guys think of the cage match?
To me, it fit like any other sort of Bret Hart cage match. It's based more on logic than on drama. Like, if you go past...
Let me pause you for a second there. There is drama and logic. And that's a problem that a lot of wrestlers don't get. And this is especially a problem with, like, the creative process in WWE where they need to make these cartoony situations. You don't need to. They're not... Cain and Abel. Like... These are biblical things that have been since the beginning of time. There's nothing more simple to book than one person not liking another person. The drama comes within that. You don't need to make up shit.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I mean, of course, like, you don't really need to make up shit if, like, I don't fuck with you and you don't fuck with me and I talk wild shit about you, and you talk wild shit about me, we could easily get people like, oh, they really want to fight.
Yeah, like, yeah. You don't need to do some angle where, like, you running over the wife or some shit. You don't need to do that. You need
to do that. Like, I mean, if it's, like, 3 months into the program and you do some shit to your wife, we're going fucking home in the next match.
Here's the thing I like about this cage match is Brett is he's trying to win the whole match. Like, there's none of this like bullshit the whole time. They're really trying to win.
It's not like, oh, let me climb the cage.
And then Austin comes out and he's trying to help him out, and Brett almost wins if it weren't for a damn Undertaker, which pisses him off.
Which actually sets up the next fucking promo that we're probably going to talk about.
More importantly, we're forgetting the fact that Austin came in, ran in, and interfered 2 times and saved Brett 2 times in the match.
He's on top of the cage now, fighting Sid.
Here's one of the problems, though, with having a bunch of interference in a cage match. It kind of negates the point of a fucking cage.
It destroys the point.
It kills the psychology.
It's the point of a cage. Then
they do all the time now.
It's like, yeah, because like the cage match, this is like the last possible bastion, because I'm going to fuck you up in this goddamn cage, and I'm going to escape, and we're going to be done.
I mean, now in WWE, they'll do a disqualification in a cage. Or like
on a random note, this is food for thought. And we've talked about what we think of WrestleMania 14 several times.
Yes.
And we're skipping a year in a hypothetical match that never happened. Austin and Bret Hell in a Cell, WrestleMania 14.
That would have been good, but the Hell in a Cell wasn't...
The like, when did the Hell in a Cell first start? That was like 96, right?
97.
Was, no, 97, Bad Blood with which we're gonna Undertaker get to. And Shawn. But if you remember, they were throwing Hell in a Cell matches and fucking Raws and
But they weren't doing that they didn't start doing that till after the Foley falls off the cell. Then we get it's around that time where they start bringing in the Hell in a Cell to Raw and things like that.
We're trying to use logic and hypotheticals.
Yes.
He was in WCW. We couldn't make Vince McMahon change his mind and do
Hell in a Cell. Are we talking about WrestleMania 14?
Yes.
WrestleMania 14. Are you talking about Brett and Austin?
Yes.
Maybe. If Brett
think
wanted
about it.
To do that
WrestleMania
match,
14, X-rated. What's an X-rated match? Hell in a Cell. It's a blood feud. It clicks. Let's be honest. You don't need The Undertaker. We've already established you don't need The Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match. It just needs to be a blood feud. Yeah. If there was ever a match that warranted a Hell in a Cell match in that era.
I just know, like, I'm just thinking Bret Hart. He would have wanted to play. I don't think he would want to go to that match with that. I think he would have wanted to.
You know why I'm saying it? Because I feel, I truly do. I feel that if you tell Brett and Austin, we're going to do a Hell in a Cell match, because you know they used to book a year ahead of time.
Yeah.
Imagine the ideas those two guys would have thought.
No, it would have been great.
Probably have never been seen to this day in a Hell in a Cell match.
I mean, like, I think that probably Brock and Roman at Mania is going to probably be in the Hell in a Cell. That's the only thing they haven't done yet.
Maybe, nah, but I mean, here's the thing. Hell in a Cell match now is just a regular match with a Hell in a Cell cage.
Yeah,
they're in the cage.
You know, with Brett. He would use the cage. They would employ clever ways that we might have never seen.
Well, that's what I would have loved. Cage. I've always wanted to see what Brett would have done. If I ever got to see Brett like you, I would have asked him, what would... Hey,
think about this. Brett takes a clipper and clips a hose in the cage and puts him in the figure four on the Hell in a Cell cage.
Ooh.
I don't know, but Brett, if you've ever looked at Brett has never been a guy that like wants to do weapons or things like that. He always likes
That is not true. In his past matches in WWE, he's definitely been comfortable with using weapons.
No, but my point is, if he was doing a Hell in a Cell, he would want the cage to be the weapon. That he wouldn't want it.
He wouldn't want it. He probably would want the cage to be a weapon, but like I think it would be silly not to incorporate other weapons.
That's the cage.
I just can't see him doing the
clippers, especially for a cage with a roof on it.
He's not using the clippers. He's using the clippers to make a hole in the mat.
And the motherfucker was healed. And the motherfucker was healed at the time.
Still using the cage.
He either stashed some shit in the fucking underbelly of the cage or on top of the cage. I mean, if you were thinking creatively.
I don't know. I've always listened to Brett when he talks about gimmick matches, and he's always been against like bringing in too many weapons. He doesn't like the idea of too many weapons.
At the same time, he did bring us the ladder match.
He did bring us the ladder match, but that's the only weapon in that match. They don't do chairs. They don't do tables.
It works.
Yeah, but I'm not saying to bring chairs and tables. I'm saying use the cage as a weapon. Yeah. I'm saying the clippers is to do
holes in the cage so you could put his legs.
If we're talking about the old clippers,
if the clippers are the only weapon, yeah, I could see him.
No, that's not a weapon. No, no, no. You're using it to make holes in the cage.
I know what you mean. I'm not... All right, disregard the idea of weapons. I mean, the only prop, the only thing that he's going to use other than the cage, yes, I could see him doing that.
Yeah, that's
I can't see him doing chairs or tables or anything like that. He's always been against that.
I was like, I can see him using a chair, not necessarily a table, but in terms of like Bret Hart, like in the machinations of his mind, the way he would think to do a Hell in a Cell match, like, yeah, he'd probably have some weapons somewhere.
I don't know. From what I've read from him talking about it, he's always been against. He's always talked about like gimmick matches, he's always been like, we use the ring as the weapon. We didn't use, you know, we didn't just pull out chairs and stuff like that.
I was like, again, for Hell in a Cell, I mean, that's a pretty big ass weapon.
I could see him taking out the pliers and like ripping the cell out and doing something like that. But he would want to incorporate ways that Sean and Taker didn't do with the cell to make that the weapon.
I agree. Bret Hart is a fucking genius at what he does.
That's why I would have wanted the match, because I feel they would have done interesting stuff, because I feel no one has ever really employed the cage, honestly, outside of Sean and Taker and Brock Lesnar and Taker. Because, like, I remember he would do the chicken fighting, Brock Lesnar, with the top of the cell because it was low. Which, honestly, Hell in Cells should be lower. That way you could actually grab the top of the cell. It's too fucking big. You can't
But they wanted it, to like, make it into a toy, and now it's red. Now it's different colors, and it's, you know.
See,
think about it, even as a viewer in the arena, it's even harder to see because it's a bigger cage.
They don't care. They care about how it comes off on TV because they've built them.
TV, it looks so much fucking
cartoonish.
Weirder.
No, I don't like it. I don't like it either, but Kevin Dunn must like it, and Vince must like it, because if they didn't like it, it wouldn't be there.
I mean, it's kind of like the same shit with the Punjabi fucking...
That's the worst gimmick.
And they tried to bring it back last year.
It's not the worst gimmick.
The fact that they made that gimmick for Great Khali, and he was so bad they couldn't even put him in it. They had to put the Big Show in against the Undertaker.
Like the gimmick match isn't bad. It's who you put in the matches that make it bad. Think about it. A ladder match could have easily been a terrible idea if you put the wrong people in it.
Also, remember about that match. Yeah, that match did not have any bamboo in it. It's bamboo made to look like steel.
Remember that No Way Out where they had JBL? Remember the No Way Out where they had JBL versus the Big Show, and they had the barbed wire at the top? I mean, that was the wrong two guys to do that match with. It was really stupid to do that match with those two guys. They did it anyways, because WWE doesn't look at matches like who's the best two guys to do the match. They just look at what do they want to do.
Yeah. Undertaker worked with gimmick matches because he was agile enough to do things with the matches. But like, why are you going to have a cage match with a guy who can't climb a cage? Tell me the logic.
Yeah.
What's the logic of that? There's none.
Stupid.
There's none.
I was like, I mean, even up
why
to
would
like,
you put Braun Strowman in a ladder match?
Even up to this day, like a lot of tag teams don't want to do no crazy shit like that. On the indies, not even on WWE.
Yeah.
If you can't walk, how you gotta climb a ladder?
I was like, ask Jim Cornette about fucking
people talking to me about Braun Strowman. Who gives a fuck about Braun Strowman? He can't work. He can't walk. He was good at one time. He can't walk now. You can't walk. You can't work. Like Terry Silver from Cobra Kai. You can't stand. You can't fight.
All right. So, all right. Anything else to say about the match, Brett versus Sid?
I mean, well, it's a serviceable match. I mean, Brett did the most what he could with dragging a broom into a wrestling ring.
Jesus, but, that match sucked.
Like
he's being.
Did you see how stiff that power bomb was? On he like dropped him right on.
It didn't feel stiff. He didn't know what he was doing.
I mean, it was stiff only because like I'm gonna go back in a little bit of history here.
He almost dropped him.
Those rings.
I was like going back to the 80s when Vince McMahon had done, Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah.
Dick Ebersole, the head of NBC Sports Home, was like, Jesus fucking Christ, like this ring looks like fake. Like what you need to do is make the ring look stiffer so it doesn't like bounce up.
Yeah, these are the stiff rings that they used to.
Stiff as fuck. Like any slam between like 1988 and like 1997.
Now
was stiff.
Here's the thing though. I liked it better that way because the sound the rings used to make really made the move seem devastating. But it also like the wrestlers hated the WWE rings. They liked the WCW rings. Now here's what happened. Vince McMahon starts wrestling Austin.
I know.
And he takes one bump. And he's like, God damn, this is hard.
Get rid of these
rings.
How
you guys do this? We've been telling you this shit for years.
Get rid of it.
We got to change it.
God damn, I didn't know it was this bad.
God damn, son. God damn, pal. What's wrong with
this? Like, honestly, like watching matches from that era, like, my God, like, there's a certain sound that when you get suplex, body slam, backbreaker, Russian leg sweep.
Like, WWF or WCW just slams just sound more succinct.
Yeah. Well, not ECW. They just sounded like a bunch of plywood was hanging around.
Because it was.
Like, yeah, that was.
It was like the ring. Wasn't
also, the crowd
stand.
Was too loud for you to hear the moves anyway.
So, I mean, I definitely didn't go into any shows in that era because I would have been like 8 or 9 years.
Bro, New Jack fell on his head. On concrete from like the second level, and you barely heard it because the crowd was so crazy.
I was like, and man. I had the privilege of actually shooting New Jack shortly before he passed away.
Did he attack you?
I was like, yeah, this was at an ICW show in Tampa, Florida, and shit, man. Like this dude comes out, and it's just like. I was like, when I met him, I think I said that he was straight up like, you're the black boogeyman to us. Because like pretty much like a motherfucker like that, like he, any sort of like rape, like any sort of slightly racist thing you said, you probably might die between the end of the match. Because pretty much that's the only time where he decided that he wanted to throw someone off of a scaffold.
I don't like this New Jack slander. He wasn't going to kill him. He just gotta, you know, stab him a little bit or cut him a little bit.
He was definitely trying to kill him.
And then go to the hospital.
He said himself, I was trying to kill that motherfucker.
I'll just try to lose some. Do you think he died?
He didn't try to kill everybody.
Some
idiots
respected
him. Deserve to get got.
They called him the N-word. It's like, oh.
Do you think he died? Do you think he died the way he wanted to in that, in the ring? What is it? In the dark side of the ring where he said, he wanted to die with a pound of like cocaine in his face.
I mean, realistically, if you're sick And if you've never tried cocaine before, wouldn't you want to try it one time?
Oh, he does mad cocaine.
I was like, but yeah, but at the same time, if you're a regular dude living a square ass life,
pretty sure his son like, sucked his dick.
You know, I'm like, let me try this cocaine thing out. Let me see what this is going on. But of course, you know, it's fucking New Jack we're talking about. So we have to assume, based on what he was saying, he was coked out all the time.
Cool. All right, so now comes the big moment in this Raw that, to me, this is what this Raw is known for. Bret Hart is in the ring. Vince McMahon is about to interview him. And what does he do? He shoves him down. And RJ, you want to give us the quote? What does he say to Vince?
Frustrated isn't the goddamn word for it.
This is bullshit.
In that time period, someone cutting a promo, even nowadays, if someone cut a promo like that, like, they would instantly get all the right amount of heat. Instantly.
Absolutely. I mean, and then he just starts going in and he goes, everybody in that goddamn dressing room knows I'm the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Then he looks at the crowd and goes, you don't like it.
Tough shit.
Which is like, great.
Like, yeah.
Like the only time he cursed.
It's like, yeah, because Bret Hart was, I mean, no matter how anyone wants to portray him as, was always a utility player. Like, I mean, he might not agree with the direction that things were going, but as long as he was there, he was going to go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, like that whole thing about Shawn Michaels having to bareback his way to a championship shot. Yeah. Oh my God. You try saying that in WWE now.
And then Austin comes in on Austin then comes on the screen or whatever, and
you're a loser.
Yeah, there you go. You do that. Yeah.
Like I don't think there was a more potent heel in WWE. E history or F history than Stone Cold at that time.
Vince McMahon.
Like directly after that, like maybe 3 minutes, he calls out The Undertaker, and then like this dude Stone Cold comes out like fucking heel, like pure heel shit.
He attacked.
You know what I'm
saying? After.
Like, wait, like this is the kind of cowardly shit heels should do.
Yeah.
They don't have to run away. Run away the way he did. Like, he didn't run away. He just waits for his moment.
Like during the fucking promo, he's gone.
And then Sid comes out and he goes, I don't know shit. My baby.
It's like, literally, he waited the second Bret Hart was on his back. Like, literally, the second he was on his back.
I think Bret might have cued him when he was walking out. I was like, give me 3 minutes.
Your stones are so cold.
A lot of people say that was the beginning of the Attitude Era. Like
that or the Raw after the Royal Rumble when all hell breaks loose and Bret quits and gets entered into it. To me, that is like the beginnings of what we would start to see Raw as.
I would agree because like that was like, I mean, I believe in that same episode, that's the time when Bret and Vince like are almost about to like fight.
Yeah, he starts calling out Vince a little bit there.
And then Austin, Vince gets that crazy look on his face like, come on, Bret!
And then Austin comes out and he says, you know, you call yourself the gorilla, yet you yeehaw out here like a jackass.
Oh, man, so cool, so good.
A lot of people think it was the King of the Ring, Austin 316 promo. I think I've already established that. I don't think they even cared about Austin after the Austin 316 promo. I do, like, I always go back to that Survivor Series black and white promo. To me, that was the first instant of something is different.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, like to me, the Brett segment with Austin and Sid and take it to me, that was just like more momentum. And I feel like the momentum went to like a cataclysm during the screw job and the DX thing. Like, I think the combination of those two things, and Austin was doing these great promos because he was hurt. Like, there was it was like a big bang almost of everything just kind of colliding. And that's when you really like got it.
But like, I can see how you say though that this could be like the beginning of the Attitude Era, because it's the first time they really used, look, they used shit, and they didn't tell the USA Network that they were going to use shit, and they got in trouble, and they didn't use it. They used it twice. It's not like today where you can just get away with shit. Shit was, that was taboo.
It's like, yeah, that, I mean, definitely at that time, wrestling was still considered like for, you know, families.
I remember Austin, DX, they got like written letters because they didn't want, they were pissed off with what they were doing.
Like any sort of like school district or anyone that had like an Austin 316 shirt back in the day, like you'll find many instances that people were suspended.
Right, South Park and wrestling, those are the big things that come in 97. Oh, that,
and South Park wrestlers.
You had the shirts with the with wrestlers dressed as South Park guys.
That was like really popular on the internet when I was coming.
I mean, Spencer's at the mall. They always had that, you know, they had all the wrestling. They had the wrestling, the South Park stuff.
South Park hasn't even debuted yet.
South Park debuts in like, I think in the fall of,
fall of 97.
Which is funny because what happens is wrestling goes crazy as well.
So like, yeah, funny. I mean, the counterculture movement.
It's like, I mean, that's what happened at the time. Stone Cold got popular, DX got popular. Like, all the kids are doing crotch chops, and they either got suspended.
Middle fingers.
Everyone did it. Middle fingers.
Honoring their teachers.
Everybody like, wanted it. I don't know, but
stunnered my teacher.
Like, on some real shit, I rock bottom my classmate in the sixth grade.
Oh, that's not even a question. I used to do.
Yeah, we would all. Everyone.
I'm like, he didn't did sell wrestling. It. He went all the way to the ground and fucking.
But all right. So, anyways,
took that rock bottom.
I'm gonna tell you something.
So,
it's never about them selling it. It's about you making them sell it. Well, yeah, and with the stunner, that's particularly tricky. But I had a secret in the middle of the stunner.
I heard him.
No, you twist the neck so they fall off balance and they have to fall and they'll bust their lip.
Okay. Well, that's good for everyone to know. All right. So the ending scene of this show is pandemonium. I mean, we didn't talk about this, but, you know, he punches Hall of Famer Pat Patterson, that dirty,
rotten son of a bitch.
Yeah, he says son of a bitch.
I was like, yeah, I will remember that shit as long as I'll ever live. I
mean, and that's another thing. We talk about standards and practices with USA. If they're mad at Bret Hart for cursing, I mean, what about Vince?
Like, yeah, he did drop an F-bomb like last year.
I know.
And son of a bitch is way more intense than shit.
The ending segment is them all fighting. You got Bret Hart who does a suicide dive onto Undertaker. And he's punching him, and like you said, Austin comes in and starts, wailing on him.
Curse. It's like, Stone Cold comes out like a chicken shit.
But then who comes out after all of this? Shawn Michaels, you know, not limping, walking. Because remember, he returns on this show. He's probably upset that he can't be on the show. Any final thoughts on this Raw?
I mean, for me personally speaking, I think I've been saying this for a while. Bret Hart was one of the chief architects of the Attitude Era. No matter if he actually didn't benefit from the actual aftermath in like 98, Bret Hart was always willing to go hard for the company that he was at. Yeah. I mean, he might have not been comfortable with what he was doing, but
let's be honest, that's not really true in WCW. Not his fault, But yeah, let's be honest, he definitely wasn't in WCW.
I mean, that's like, what when Brett says he punched Vince, all he said he could think of, he said, like, you know, what was it, 14 years of just like missing birthdays, giving this guy working.
Yeah, like that, that all that shit is heavy, like, especially when it fucked over in that same way.
Yeah, that uppercut. I mean, he knocked him out. It's not like he just punched him. He knocked Vince out. You can see him when he's walking by in the Wrestling with Shadows. He's got
he's definitely walking around like, God damn, pal. I know Bret Hart had that capable in him.
That's why when people like time-honored tradition, I'm like, why should you show loyalty to a company that historically has never shown loyalty to anybody? Okay,
exactly.
Like,
and he knows that.
You show me the biggest star that WWE has ever had, and at a given moment, and I'll show you one moment where WWF did some shady ass shit to them. Bruno, Hogan. Even though Hogan is shady as fuck, so he gets what he deserves. Bret,
Austin, everybody.
I mean, even Shawn, even though it's his own fault, but you know.
Yeah. All of them. They all got screwed up.
Put them down a peg for having a heart attack.
So, all right. Any final thoughts on this Raw?
That's your own family.
Yeah.
You fire your own son.
Any final thoughts on this Raw?
I think this is one of the pivotal moments in the Attitude Era. This you said Brett was a utility. I don't agree with that. I would probably put more The Undertaker in that position. I would put Bret Hart more in the Hallmark. Like, even though he wasn't one of the biggest draws of all time, there's no disputing that, like, that new generation's era was Shawn and Bret, but it was more Bret than Shawn. Yeah. And Shawn kind of went in the tail end.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was his era. So to me, when you're the guy, you can't be a utility player because your position is people revolved around you. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and let's be honest, like, to me, he is one of the bullets, if you say, of what begun the Attitude Era. Because we've discussed this. Without Bret Hart, I think we'd be watching the WCW network, because without Bret, I don't think you get Austin. And I know for a fact, without Austin, they were not. I think WCW still dies. But I think like that massive advantage WWE capitalized by going public in 2000, which like set up the rest of their infrastructure in the future, would have never happened without Stone Cold. No. I am 100%.
Especially, I agree.
WWE going public does not happen without Stone Cold. I wholeheartedly believe that.
You know, like, I hate when people talk about like DX and Triple H
that's revisionist.
They're more of a detriment to the.
They were utility guys.
All right, but so anything else to say about this episode? I think we've covered it all.
I think this episode of Raw proves that, you know, no matter how bad the industry gets, if you just give like 6 months to a couple of really capable guys, you could turn things around. And then by the end of 1998, WWE is making more money than they've ever had.
Yeah, agreed.
And another point on that is, like, lost my train of thought.
All right, so RJ, you got anything else you want to plug or anything? Remember, it's a week after.
Of course.
You know why we hate on WWE so much and people like...
Because they've dropped the ball.
Don't you think you're very critical? People need to understand that all the rules that we complain that they break, they invented the fucking rules.
Exactly.
This is what's so frustrating. We know what they can do because they're the ones that showed us that it can be done.
Yeah.
And they actively go against their own teachings.
It's like the same thing with the U.S. government. You can say the same thing.
they taught us about how wrestling should be perceived and then went against those rules.
I mean, have you watched like an old DVD of WWE talking about why WCW died? They do all of this shit.
And they're doing the exact same stuff.
Third hour Nitro killed them. And then they do it too.
They did that. Yeah. Well, we couldn't, you know, say no to the money.
They talk about how they only put over old talent. And that's all they do now.
That's all they do now.
Like, I mean, I distinctly remember like that whole thing in 97 where they had like all the old timers come out and shoot the commercial. From fucking Pat Patterson to Thunderbolt, Thunderbolt Patterson was even in those fucking early commercials.
It's great. Yeah, that's like, great I mean, moment. Like, I can still like, hear them cheering my name.
Oh, you're talking about like the Freddie Blassie thing? Yeah. Like now they cheered for them. I think that's one of the most beautiful things they ever did.
Like, it's the only sort of promo that ever has made Vince McMahon cry.
Probably.
That's how affecting that was.
Like, it's something like as a film fan that we all are, like, we can appreciate the artistry of that. Yes. And it's such a shame we never get anything like that now.
No, it's all cartoonish. I mean, it doesn't imagine mean anything, like, and nothing's anything.
Yeah, imagine like that same promo of like a Bret Hart and a Stone Cold and Shawn Michaels.
You know what was weird? Like, you saw like heels. I had a scene in Young Rock in my head, in the scene where Rocky Johnson is thinking about like the old times when, you know, he was a star. And I thought of this scene that is very much like the Freddie Blassie thing, where like in his head, he's having memories of him wrestling like Andre the Giant or Bruno or probably, what's his name? Cross chicken wing guy. Bob Backlund.
Bob Backlund, yeah.
You know, like, and having like the like flashback where like the crowd is chanting him, and then like next thing you know, there's nobody in the ring but him, and they're just chanting him, and then there's nobody there, and then just a spotlight on him, and then fade to black right there.
That would be the great way to end that show.
That's what I wanted. That's the ending I wanted. Because I know it's not supposed to be that kind of show. Heel does stuff like that. I like that because I feel outside of the wrestler, there's never really...
Young Rock is basically...
It's just a comedy. I get that.
Comedy.
I get that. I just feel like wrestling has never really had a medium where like you can see the artistry at like full power.
Well, heels is kind of doing that too.
Heels is kind of like that.
It's kind of cheap.
There.
It's kind of cheap, and also the fact that they don't use real wrestlers, it kind of like to me, like the scene that I talked about, Rocky Johnson, your Madison Square Garden. There's things that connect you, even if you didn't know who he was. You know what Madison Square Garden is. You know who Andre is. There's things that connect you to the scene, even if you know nothing about wrestling or what's going on. And with heels, you can like it just to like it.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's a fictional world can kind of take you out of it. If you're like thinking of the full artistry, because I think there's such a brilliant history in baseball too, but in wrestling that isn't touched on though. It's like history is just the attitude era.
Yeah.
They barely talk about anything else.
Like, they don't really talk about the 80s and like all the people there. But I mean, even to me, it's just like the wrestlers, like, I mean, that's in participation with that sort of thing. I mean, they never, like, they have these sort of storylines where a worker will go into business for themselves and break another worker's arm. But to me, it's never approached as seriously as it should be, because that's a very serious thing. If you, as a wrestler, if you have beef with me and you decide to break my fucking leg and fuck with my bookings for the next 6 months, that's huge fucking beef. And like none of those shows really.
No, they don't take
that
it enough serious. And they
not just that, your brother's doing it too. It just
like
it's a great show, but like I feel like it's a perfect version. Of like in my mind, and I think I've said this to you guys, HBO show, 1980s, the rise of Vince McMahon, 1982, 1983.
That would be
to
great.
1984.
We've talked about that, yeah.
I think there's so much you can do, so much.
That would be cool.
So, but he has to die for it to be done.
But also, you know that Vince McMahon has like a documentary. All
right, but
Netflix is shooting that.
That's why he has to die.
All right, let's, all right. So anything else to say about this Raw? We're done with this Raw.
I think we said everything we need to say.
Oh man!
All right, RJ.
Tomorrow.
What do you want to say?
I was like, I mean, well, yeah. I mean, in terms of like, you know, wrestling. I mean, I have some things scheduled as a photographer later on in the month. That's going to be for ICW on the 22nd in Jersey, in Newark. So like I there's still tickets available. If you've never experienced a deathmatch show, I'd highly, highly, highly recommend that you go to this show at ICW in New Jersey. Like you might find yourself converted. I'm just saying. I'm just the guy that shoots it. But in terms of everything else, it's like, yeah, I mean, this is my homie. He's been my homie for like very, very fucking long time. We came together fucking loving wrestling. Like that's how we really connected. Like I said, I was a wrestling fan. I was a Bret Hart fan. You said you was Stone Cold.
Like it started right. It literally started right there. Like it's funny how that goes.
And I was like, yeah, we've been friends pretty much ever since.
All right. The truth
shall
set
your voice a little gone there. You
yeah it is free.